Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond by Louise Carlton-Gertsch is powered by Ernst Klett Sprachen, der Verlag für modernes Fremdsprachenlernen in Schule, Ausbildung, Universität und Erwachsenenbildung. Sprachenlernen fürs Leben.
Hello and welcome to Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond. A podcast in which we'll be looking at ways to help students of English develop important skills for the 21st century. I'm your host, Louise Carlton-Gertsch.
We live in an era where the best way to make a dent on the world may no longer be to write a letter to the editor or publish a book. It may be simply to stand up and say something, because both the words and the passion with which they're delivered can now spread across the world at warp speed. This is how Chris Anderson describes the power of speaking in his 2016 book, TED Talks, The Official TED Guide to Public Speaking. He goes on to explain that presentation literacy is one of the key literacies for the 21st century. Yet at the same time, over a quarter of us report being afraid of speaking in public. Why is this, and what can we do to counter it? In their book, Rewire Your Anxious Brain, Elizabeth Carl and Catherine Pittman explain that we often feel afraid of public speaking because we're worried about having the audience's eyes on us. This goes back to prehistoric times. Our amygdala, a region of the brain primarily associated with emotions that drives our so-called fight or flight response, can create a fear response in situations that are not actually dangerous. Evolutionary scientists have suggested that we might interpret eyes watching us as being potentially dangerous because they might belong to a person who is hostile towards us. So we feel under attack or painfully exposed, and this then triggers a fight or flight response. In a 2019 article for the Harvard Business Review, the speech coach Sarah Gershman sums up the way we can overcome our fear by saying we need to stop thinking about ourselves. She suggests beginning with three steps. Number one, thinking about your audience when preparing rather than the topic. Asking yourself why they're there and what they need. Then crafting the message to answer these needs. Number two, refocusing your brain before you speak. Reminding yourself just before the presentation that you're there to help the audience. It's not about you. Number three, make eye contact with specific people rather than either looking down at your notes or trying to look at everyone at once. She suggests making eye contact with one person per thought. This is something that not only makes the people in the audience feel seen, but as she points out, it's far easier and more effective to have a series of one-on-one conversations than it is to speak to everyone at once. She goes on to add that the most important people to look at are those who are at the far edges of the room. These are the people who are already at a disadvantage. By being extra generous to those at the edges of the room, you bring everyone in. And perhaps most importantly of all, we need to remind ourselves that the audience is human and usually made up of nice people. There are many different types of presentations, depending on the goal and the situation. Some are informative, some persuasive, others intended to educate, while others set out to inspire. Here are just a few examples. The elevator pitch. This is a short but easy to understand presentation of you, your idea, or your company. It's typically 30 to 60 seconds, so the time it takes to ride an elevator to the top of a tall building. It can be used in an interview in response to the prompt, "Tell me about yourself," a prompt that many people dread. Or at a conference or networking event when asked, "So, what do you do?" It needs to be straight to the point. Simple enough to be memorable, yet carefully crafted, tailored to the situation or audience, and practiced so that the delivery is natural but polished. Then there's the sales pitch. This is typically a presentation that has the intention of persuading someone to buy something. But a successful pitch is not about just outlining a product's advantages. Interestingly, in a survey conducted by the Harvard Business Review, most business leaders agreed that a winning pitch is not about what you're selling, but crucially, who you're pitching to. Among other things, they stressed the need for people to be passionate about the problem they're trying to solve through their product, and not just about the product itself. Another key element they mention is the ability to listen well to the audience's concerns and questions, and then to respond carefully. A lightning talk is a short talk, usually 5 minutes, that's given at a conference and used to present a new idea. Because it's fast-paced, the presenter has to distill their message into a few key points and to focus on the most important elements. Lightning talks are often used in agile environments, allowing teams to share insights in a focused manner and are a refreshing way to present updates. Pechakucha, which means chit-chat in Japanese, has a fixed format. The presenter shares their idea through a series of 20 slides, each with one image, with 20 seconds of commentary per slide. Thus, a presentation lasts exactly 6 minutes and 40 seconds. The slides advance automatically, so timing is of the essence. It was created by two architects in Tokyo almost 20 years ago as a way of streamlining long presentations. This fixed format means that the presenter doesn't have time to digress, but has to focus on the key message for each slide and to find an image that enhances each one. A variation on this is the Ignite presentation. Speakers have 20 slides that advance automatically every 15 seconds, thus a total of 5 minutes. It's more succinct than Pechakucha and even more fast-paced. Poster presentations are widely used in academic settings and at conferences. Information is summarized concisely and in an attractive manner, usually in the form of a very brief text with graphs and other visuals. The presenter stands next to the poster and is ready to answer questions about it. They've also often prepared a brief pitch for visitors. A TED Talk is an informative or motivational presentation, limited to 18 minutes or less. The length is based on neuroscience and the TED organizer's experience. As Chris Anderson says, the 18-minute length works much like the way Twitter forces people to be disciplined in what they write. By forcing speakers who are used to going on for 45 minutes to bring it down to 18, you get them to really think about what they want to say. What's the key point they want to communicate? It has a clarifying effect. It brings discipline. TED Talks are delivered without notes, and the speaker doesn't stand behind a lectern. But crucially, they're personal and cover something the speaker feels passionate about. To do so, good speakers use stories as well as novel or memorable ideas to get their message across and engage the audience on an emotional level. As we can see, different situations require different types of presentations. Yet even if we're thinking of the same situation, there's no one recipe for giving a talk that will guarantee success. The content, structure, and style of delivery will depend on the person giving the talk. As Chris Anderson writes in his book, indeed, even if there were a successful formula at one moment in time, it would not stay successful for very long. That's because a key part of a great talk is its freshness. But one thing is sure, if we have an idea that's worth sharing, that we're knowledgeable about, we're more likely to be able to do so with passion. And this is key because passion is authentic and charismatic. It also enables us to form a connection with the people to whom we're speaking. Yet there are certain aspects that still need to be considered. Aristotle taught that a speaker's ability to persuade an audience depends on how they appeal to their listeners in three different areas. Logos, so a person's way of appealing to another person's reason. Ethos, or credibility. And pathos, emotion and the ability to make an emotional connection with the receiver. So when we're giving a talk, we should be looking at whether our arguments are clear, logical, and arranged in a well-reasoned order, whether the message is consistent. We should be thinking about whether we have included different viewpoints, used credible sources, whether the tone and style of the speaker, or those whose arguments are brought in, support the argument. And ensuring that we find ways to appeal to the audience's emotions, enabling them to identify with our point of view. This is where storytelling comes in. Stories, anecdotes, and personal insights. But it all begins with the audience. Many experts use the analogy of a journey to explain what a good talk is. The speaker should take the audience on a journey, and this means we have to decide where the journey begins and where it ends. No matter whether it's a 30-second elevator pitch or a full-blown lecture, this decision is crucial. But in order to be able to do this, we first of all need to think what the audience knows about the topic. A good presentation is written with the audience in mind, not the speaker. This will affect the language we use, whether we need to explain technical terms or not, and so on. In his book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, Stephen Covey lists Habit 5 as seek first to understand, then to be understood. He places a lot of emphasis on listening, empathetic listening, to other people's concerns. This is one of the biggest challenges and an often neglected principle when communicating, knowing your audience. We often don't take the time to familiarize ourselves with what they already know and what their expectations are. This is one of the lessons I learned very early on, in fact, with one of the first presentations I ever gave. I'd prepared and practiced, and although I was nervous, I felt ready. I began the presentation, a one-hour talk, but soon realized that I was losing the audience. People started fidgeting and getting restless. I couldn't work out why and started losing my nerve. When we came to the Q&A at the end, it became clear. The audience and I had gone in with different expectations. They were there to get ideas and inspiration, and I was there to sell the company that had asked me to give the presentation. So I was giving a sales pitch. Needless to say, it wasn't a success. This presentation haunted me for years, dented my self-confidence. I realized I'd failed the audience because I hadn't focused on their needs, but rather on what I wanted to tell them. Ever since, I've tried to put the needs of the audience first. Once we've defined the audience's needs, we have to identify our message, the key point that the audience should remember. And again, this should be something that caters to the needs of the audience, not those of the speaker. In his 2018 article, The Art of the Elevator Pitch, Carmine Gallo suggests doing this in the form of a logline, so summing it up in one or two sentences. It's a technique that screenwriters use when they pitch a new idea. Gallo writes, "A logline should be easy to say and easy to remember. As an exercise, challenge yourself to keep it under 140 characters, short enough to post on the old version of Twitter." It's also important to grab the audience's attention right from the beginning. This can be done in a variety of ways, but depends very much on the personal style of the speaker and the audience in question. It might be telling a personal story that relates to the topic, or asking a question, as Sir Ken Robinson did in his memorable TED talk, "Do Schools Kill Creativity?" He began by saying, "Good morning. How are you? It's been great, hasn't it? I've been blown away by the whole thing. In fact, I'm leaving." And of course, his dry British humour played no small part in the success of this opening. Another possibility is getting the audience to imagine something, so beginning with a what-if scenario, or imagine. Or maybe opening with an arresting statement, as Julian Treasure did in his TED talk, How to Speak So That People Want to Listen. He says, "The human voice, it's the instrument we all play. It's the most powerful sound in the world, probably. It's the only one that can start a war or say, I love you." Or a photo or visual that surprises the audience, or a quotation, the list goes on. But whatever you decide, a well-chosen opening will make the audience more receptive and establish a connection between you and your audience right from the beginning. The delivery. There are three main ways to deliver a talk. Firstly, it can be crafted in full, then read directly from a script or a teleprompter, something that politicians or keynote speakers often do. Of course, this is rehearsed so that the delivery doesn't sound too wooden, but nevertheless, it can create a barrier between the speaker and their audience, as it might come across as being too formal and distant. Additionally, it can mean that the speaker is more focused on reading the speech rather than interacting with the audience. A talk delivered in this manner can also seem static, as the speaker is glued to the lectern, whereas if they're able to speak freely, they can move around and are thus more dynamic. Secondly, a talk can be given freely, with the speaker possibly referring to notes in the presentation or on cue cards, something that students are taught to do. This allows for more interaction between the audience and speaker, but if the notes are too detailed, it can mean that the speaker is using them too much as a prop rather than as a way of jogging their memory. Or lastly, a talk can be memorized word for word and then delivered without any memory aids, as is the case with elevator pitches or TED Talks. This is, of course, the most time-consuming method and can take hours and hours of practice. While it works well with an elevator pitch, Although the time needed to learn and deliver this should not be underestimated, it's often not practical for longer presentations. But whichever delivery method we settle on, practice is vital. Not just the words in the script, but also the speed, pitch, volume, intonation, modulation, and of course, using pauses. In music, we sometimes find the marking GP, meaning general pause. It's a sign that the music stops. There's an interval of silence. It can be incredibly powerful as it frames what we hear before and after, giving us both time to digest and to anticipate. The same is true of a pause in a presentation. Carmine Gallo writes, "A simple way to learn the power of the pause is to choose one or two phrases in your next presentation that express the key message you want to leave your audience with. Pause before you deliver those lines. For example, the most important thing I'd like you to remember is this. Pause for two beats before you complete the sentence. Whatever you say next will be instantly memorable." Giving a presentation in the English-speaking classroom. As we all know, many students get nervous speaking in front of others, especially when they have to do so in a language that's not their own. Let's face it, how many English teachers wouldn't feel a little nervous if they had to stand up in front of a group of their peers and give a presentation in English? In the US, there have been calls, especially on social media, for other alternatives to be offered to students who get very anxious about speaking in front of others. And this is understandable. Yet others argue that if presentation literacy were more firmly embedded in the curriculum, we would be able to help students to practice and get experience before they have to learn this vital skill in a work setting. Students need to be given multiple opportunities to learn how to craft a good presentation and also how to deliver it. We need to ensure that they have adequate time to practice, that they can try out different formats in different situations, rather than always using the same one. For instance, getting students to create and memorize a one-minute elevator pitch, "This is me," for a prospective interview, would be a challenging yet rewarding task, and very different from having to do the usual topic-based one. Or getting them to give a freer presentation with just images and single words on a slide, on something that they're passionate about. The key here, of course, is allowing them to choose the topic. Or having students give a Pecha Kucha presentation in a group, with each student responsible for three or four slides. At the same time, we need to find ways of involving those who are listening, so as to raise their level of engagement. So what can students do to engage their peers? Have slides with powerful visuals and fewer words. As molecular biologist John Medina says, "Hear a piece of information, and 3 days later you'll remember 10% of it. Add a picture, and you'll remember 65%. This will also discourage students from merely reading out their bullet points and encourage them to speak more freely, although this does require a lot of practice. Incorporate the element of surprise. We all like hearing or seeing something new and unexpected, and it's a good way to try to engage one's classmates. So they should see if they can find a piece of information, statistic, a quote or visual that might generate surprise. Tell stories. We process information much better through stories, and they help us to connect with the audience. However, they don't necessarily have to be personal. An anecdote or story about someone who experienced an event firsthand can also have a powerful effect. Include a call to action. After summarizing the key points at the end of the presentation, they could suggest something that the others could do with the information, thus giving students a reason for listening and something that they should act upon. Additionally, we could encourage the audience to come up with actionable and specific feedback. Angela Lee Duckworth, professor of psychology at the University of Pennsylvania, says that she and her team always give each other two pieces of feedback after completing a task or giving a presentation. One is positive, the other more critical. The positive feedback is called an IWEW, or "It was effective when." They refer to the critical feedback as an NTT, or "Next time try." So focusing on what would be better the next time. But notably, this critical feedback is actionable and not framed in a negative manner. In a classroom setting, we might possibly decide just to focus on the IWEW, so the "it was effective when," so that students are encouraged to take a positive stance. Presentation literacy is vital in today's world. We all need to find our voice so that we're not afraid to share our ideas in public. And this requires help and practice. As Carmine Gallo writes at the end of his book, "You don't need luck to be an inspiring speaker. You need examples, techniques, passion and practice. You also need courage. The courage to follow your passion, articulate your ideas simply, and express what makes your heart sing." This is what we should be teaching students today. Thanks for listening.
Teaching English Today, The Four Seas and Beyond, by Louise Carlton-Gertsch, was brought to you by Ernst Klett Sprachen, der Verlag für modernes Fremdsprachenlernen in Schule, Ausbildung, Universität und Erwachsenenbildung. Sprachenlernen fürs Leben.